Peace. You're tuned into the Edible Activist Podcast. I am your host and favorite edible activist, Melissa L. Jones. On this show, we feed you empowering narratives and perspectives from the voices of emerging Black people and people of color in food and agriculture who are stewarding the land, healing communities, and advocating for food justice and economic power across the globe. Our rich contributions and stories exemplify the spirit of activism in their own edible way. Let's get started.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy Chris back at it again, and you're listening to the Afrobeats Podcast, the show where we interview dope guests of the African diaspora to get their perspective on soul and culture through the lens of food and the land. Today's special guest in the building, we got one of my personal favorites. I call her the mouthpiece of the people. She's a multi-talented, multimedia platform. Food Talks in Color amplifies Black people and people of color in the food and agriculture space, their journeys, perspectives, and stories within that platform. She's also the host of the Edible Activist Podcast, a show where she travels around the DC area and beyond to document food journeys and narratives from people of color across spaces. You know, we got gardeners, farmers, activists, artists, agriculture leaders. I call her Big Sis. We're actually cut from the same cloth, so I'm happy to be the first podcast that we're doing together, the first person that gets to interview her. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Melissa L. Jones.
What up? What up? I am thrilled to be here and honored, Chris. Not only are you the first podcast to interview me, you are the first Black podcaster. Ooh. So that's a double whammy.
Let's go. That's what we like to do. We like to break stuff around here. So, you know, this place we're in right now, we're in the full service radio station right now at the Line DC. This is such a special place to me because I feel like I want to give you your flowers right now. This is the place where I feel like I began to blossom as a creative, really. It was a place where I got the confidence to, you know, talk my shit, like really believe in myself. And you really did that for me. I remember when we came in here first, I brought you some flowers and we just had a good time. I think it was back in episode 22.
We were somewhere in the 20s.
It was the early days. Early. I'm basically like a legacy member, basically.
You are. You really are. You are. I am on episode 134 now. Yeah. And also, I think definitely worth noting is that you took over my show for a bit. So you did about 5 episodes.
I remember that. That was good times. I was scared as I don't know what, but that really propelled me to, you know, do my own podcast and really stay with it. And I'm still doing it as well. So here we are back at again. This is long overdue. And, you know, first I got to ask this question. Me and my boy Lenny were here. We're talking about it. Back in the day, you used to have the do a little caveats and say, oh, this is the Edible Podcast, but not that type of podcast. Did people think that this was like a weed podcast for the longest time? Did you?
To this day, edible activist, you know, edible. Sometimes it can be like, all right, you know, is it weed, right? Or are we trying to get kinky over here, right? So I've seen and heard the extremes, okay? Yeah. But the point is that, and some folks like get it. They connect with it. And it's all love either way because it's a conversation starter. And so one of the most important things for me about this platform, pardon me, is to really have people feel comfortable, like my guests, but not in a sense of like feeling comfortable with like the downsides of like the food space, but just being able to have relatable conversations that anyone can engage with. So I find it hilarious, you know, so, and I love it. Someone started calling me an edible activist a while back before I even knew that this was a thing. Wow. So I took it and ran with it. I did not steal an idea. Let me be very clear. Okay. And if anything, the person who called me the edible activist is probably owed to me, but I won't say, I won't even go into that, but I ran with it. So yeah, it's like, oh, edibles.
I love that.
Yeah. But you know, for the most part, people, they have an understanding of what it means.
It's such a great name because that's something people can get behind and see themselves in. Like, I see myself as that now. I call myself an edible activist because of this podcast.
You do.
Yeah, I put it in my bio and everything.
And I noticed that. Yeah. And it makes me feel, I'm just truly honored because, Chris, you have been a super duper advocate and supporter of everything that I've done. And again, I just wanted the word edible activist to be a play on words like food, and that because everyone eats, right? And although we talk about issues that are deeper than food, I want everyone to feel like they are empowered to do something, you know? And so it's like food, edible, that own personal activism that may look different from how I act that out versus how you act that out or anyone else. Like, we all have that within us internally, whether we know it or not. And so I would love for more people to tap into that and call themselves an edible activist. So
absolutely. Yeah. I feel like we have so many different similarities that I don't even think about. For some reason, our journeys are so parallel to each other. Like, I think you grew up in Montgomery County for like a little bit. I'm also from Montgomery County, so we know about the DMV. We'll talk about your Mississippi roots and lineage there. Mm-hmm. You know, we kind of started around the same time with our platforms. You know, we're all in the space. I know you're in the event space as well. I've done events as well. So there's just a lot there. But before I get into the podcast and a little bit about that, I want to know your origin story. What is your superhero moment where you're like, I'm gonna do this podcast? Who were you before? Who was Melissa like growing up? Like, what does little Melissa look like?
Oh, I love that question so much. Because I'm a firm believer in like tapping into like your inner child.
Yeah.
And there are opportunities that I do have to be able to connect who I was as a child to the work today. And I think that's super important. So for the record, Melissa is the same old Melly Mel, okay, before, well, kind of, okay, but in the sense of, like, same personality, you know, like, true, authentic, that's just me, bubbly. But I can tell you, there's so many different ways I can approach your question, but to be more direct in terms of, like, who's little Melissa, I actually had a conversation the other day. And I remember both my sister and I growing up, you know, 80s babies. We were outside. We were playing. Yes, we had Nintendo some years down the line, right? But we knew what it meant to be outside all day. You know, we had a blackberry bush that we didn't know whether it was poisonous or not, but we still ate it. They were valid. They were, you know, they were blackberries. Like, we were outside. We taught ourselves how to swim. We were active. We were in the woods. We were in the forest. We were, like, playing with sap and trees. Like, that was us. And where we grew up at in Montgomery County, which is a melting pot and continues to be a melting pot, and it's beautiful, was that, and I tell people this all the time, I think one of the reason for my ways and why I'm particular, especially about food and, you know, how it tastes and where it's from and, you know, how authentic it is because my neighbors were Ethiopian. My neighbors downstairs were Jamaican. The people who babysat us were African. You know, my neighbors on the ninth floor were from El Salvador. I had food at my fingertips, me and my sister and I, like literally like sticky rice, like I know what good curry tastes like outside of going to Jamaica. Yeah. I don't think I've had it anywhere here in this area other than at my neighbor's house in the basement level. They were straight from Jamaica. That was my childhood growing up. And so, you know, coming up to this point, I love making those connections because, you know, though we talk a lot about food justice and insecure, you know, food insecurity, we talk about different cultures, you know, as well and how our food is sourced. And we've had people grace my show from all sorts of backgrounds, demographics, you know. And so I remember that coming up, and I definitely think that's very important. Or a very important connector to where I am now, just having those experiences that, you know, as I, like in my 20s, I still thought about, but like the more I do this show and I think about like the purpose of this work, I think about little Melissa.
Yeah.
You know, like one of my babysitters was from Dominican Republic.
Mm. You got a little bit of everything.
Everything, wow. You know, so like, and also mama, I didn't grow up with a silver spoon in my mouth, so my mother had to figure out who was babysitting us,
right?
Okay,
that's when the neighborhood used to take care of you, though. Yes, that's real.
Yes, that's what I knew coming up. Also, my parents were fresh from Mississippi, so not only was I eating from different
neighbors and their, you know, I had injera at a very early age. Like I smelt it next door when someone died. It was a whole thing. Like it was a whole, like I remember those experiences. But my parents were fresh from Mississippi. So we were still eating chitlins. We were still eating hog mugs, you know, like we were still eating like fresh peas and stuff, you know.
So, and the clay, apparently. So what I heard.
That's my mom. Okay. That's her country self from Alabama. Okay. I'm proud of it. So that's little Melissa. And I joke because I was did a show the other day, and actually I have to shout out Ruth Tyson, who is phenomenal. And we were talking about foraging and stuff like that. And I'm not trying to derail the conversation, but we're talking to another podcaster, so you know. And we talked about, I said, Ruth, I said, how can we get more color folk out in the forest so we can start, you know, picking mulberries and stuff that our ancestors did, stuff that my grandmother still talks to me about to this day. Yeah. And I said, coming up, my sister and I were not afraid to like hop in the forest and to like pick a blackberry. Honeysuckles were at our fingertips. I would not pick a honeysuckle right now because I don't know what they do to these lawns here, okay?
Those DC airs are a little bit different.
Okay? So I was like, how can we get more of us out there? And I was just like, even me, who's like, I just turned 40, proud of it.
I'm like, don't look it, by the way. We're going to show you the visuals, guys, but we're going to have to drop the skincare routine or something. Because I didn't even know you were like that old. That's crazy.
I appreciate that. I know. Men, you know, they have their way of saying things. Y'all have your way of saying things. I get what you were saying, though. I said, how can we get more of us out there, you know, back to the land and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. I said, because some of my girlfriends, if I'm like, let's go forage, and they're like, Melissa, what the hell? But they do trust me, though. They know me. They know what I'm about. They do trust me. And what I said to her, I was just like, that's when I also tapped back into my inner youth. I said, because we weren't afraid coming up. Mm-hmm. I said, you get me out there now. Me and my mom went on a foraging tour with Niraj to cultivate the city, and we were looking to our left and to our right. We know, my mom spotted a couple snakes, and I'm like, I don't know about this, y'all. So it's like, I love that you asked that question, because it's like, how can I get back to, you know, little Melissa?
Yeah.
You know, so I appreciate that so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love that. And you have such a strong lineage and history in the land as well. I'm curious about what you learned from your many conversations with your grandparents and your mom. And I know you go back to Mississippi quite frequently. What did you learn from, you know, you did a couple episodes where you actually interviewed them and you're taking the time to document, which is so important. What did you learn from those lessons?
So much. I will tell you this. If anybody is blessed enough to still have their grandparents in their lives, document every single moment. I don't care if you're sitting in the kitchen, y'all taking a walk down the street, or your grandmother is driving you across a church parking lot to pick persimmons, which my grandmother did, okay? Document those moments. That is like one of the biggest lessons. Don't wait for it to be an intentional interview. Don't wait until somebody's on their deathbed. Like, literally document every single thing. I think also the greatest lessons that I have pulled from my lineage is just, there are a few ways to answer this. I am the great-granddaughter of a sharecropper. Mm-hmm. My great-grandfather was a sharecropper.
What does that mean for people who don't know?
So for people who don't know, he pretty much worked the land in exchange for being able to take care of his family and live there. That's pretty much what it was. So he cultivated the land. He grew food in order to have to live there and provide for his family. So he didn't own the land. So sharecropper does not mean he did not own that land. But he cultivated the land, and him and my great-grandmother, who was a homemaker, along with my grandmother and my great-aunt, who are the two last remaining siblings of my great-grandmother and great-grandfather's kids remaining, they lived there. So I learned a lot about, you know, what they grew. And you know what? When I had went over a year ago, so this is on my dad's side. Let me be very clear. This is on my dad's side. My great-grandmother was pretty much a doula for the entire community. So Mount Olive, Mississippi is extremely small. You blink, you miss it. You don't even know where it is on the map. It's probably like 800 people there. That's where my dad and his family are from. Yeah. So one of my last visits, I learned that she pretty much delivered every single baby in that town. So when I think about my work as a creator, I'm like, my great-grandmother was like a creator too, you know, like in that her, like, that was, she didn't know it then, you know, but just thinking about birthing, when you're a creator, you birth ideas, yeah. You're birthing perspectives, you're birthing ideas, you're birthing projects, you know? And so I was able to make those connections when I was in Mount Olive and just listening to these stories. And I was like, my great-grandmother did that? Like, she delivered you? Like, I'm talking to the person who she delivered. And so I felt like such like a very like close, even though she's been gone, she passed when I was like 5. And I remember her to this day, actually, because when we first moved up here, she would come visit us, but she wouldn't say anything. She would just sit in her chair. She would say nothing. She had long, beautiful hair. She had all these moles. That's where I get my moles from. I inherited my moles from my dad's side. She had all these moles all over her. But my great-grandparents, like, they tended to the land. They never owned any of it. One of the trips that I went to, I spent a significant amount of time, you're right, over the last few years going to Mississippi, spending, like, we've always gone every single year because my parents always made it, they wanted us to remain connected to our family. So since we were babies, every year, I don't think we've ever missed a trip going to Mississippi. But just learning that we actually have some land in our family. I won't go too deep into that. I actually had a conversation the other day with a few Black women who we celebrated, and how do you talk about family land without airing your dirty laundry?
Yeah. Yeah, I know about
that. So that's all I can say to that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I am so loyal to my family, yeah. But there's some things that I've been unearthing about land in our family, sure. And it is so deep.
That's the hard side. You got to take the good with the bad because there's so many stories once you start digging.
Yeah.
There's a reason some people don't talk about certain things.
Exactly. Yeah. But I've learned that we are resilient. Absolutely. We have so many great cooks in my family. Like, I'm just not even talking about present, but down my lineage, like my great grandmother was an amazing cook. Everything, obviously everything from scratch, right? Like, and I just remember my dad actually telling me stories about my great grandmother and like the tea cakes that she would make and everything that she would make from scratch and like how like my dad would have like an earache and literally like she would pour pee in his ear, like all of those healing stories.
Whoa.
You know, pee. Don't pour no pee down my ear, okay? All right. Now, if that's the last resort, maybe.
Yeah.
But don't let it be your first option, okay? But I just, the biggest thing was a reminder to document every moment if you can. Talk to everyone. I was in Mount Olive, like, literally going from door to door because it's a very small community. And so for the people who were left, I was able to get, you know, remnants of stories and bits of stories of my great grandparents. And there's a house there that's where they lived too. So aside from the land that they grew, there was another house. It's a structure that's still up. That is still up. And it's boarded up. And to this day, if I were to take you to Mount Olive, I can show you that. And to be that close, yeah, to something that your great grandparents like lived in and your great aunts, it's just incredible. And so I think the other thing is that I wasn't raised in Mississippi, but a lot of people would think that I was because of the way that I rep it. But please know that I got Mississippi in my blood, okay? But so many lessons. And yeah, but document every moment. You know, I'll sit. And so that's my dad's side of the family. My mom's side of the family is a whole different story because my grandmother's still living. I'm blessed, right? She just turned 89. Lord, charge my head, not my heart, if that ain't the right age. But she's in her 80s. And I'm sitting in the kitchen with my grandmother. I hear stories all the time. This was the grandmother who drove me across a rocky-ass parking lot to pick, I think we picked figs. We picked something. She just has this, you know, internal wisdom, yeah, you know, for, like, she can see a tree. She could see a pecan tree. She knows immediately we're driving, and she can just pick it out. Mm-hmm. You know, I love her so much. I took her out to another part of Mississippi to meet with a sheep farmer, and they talked all day because this particular sheep farmer, like her grandfather own massive land in Mississippi, like back in the day, and they still have this estate. So being able to put them in the same room and have those conversations, and the families like know each other because my grandfather knew her family, but so many connections. The history is rich, and it's like document, document, document. So there's still so much that I need to unearth. I was just able to get at least 30 of us on a group chat on my dad's side, in a group me chat. And so I'm really trying to divvy up some responsibility. And one of the things, I really want someone to like really work on the family tree. I would love to do that. I want to make time to do it. I just don't have the capacity to. It's very important to me, but there are a couple other there are a couple people in my family who are really dedicated to really unearthing that and really like seeing it to bloom. So that's the other thing, like just really get down to the bottom of like, you know, who's in your family and what they grew. I learned what my great grandparents grew, what they ate. But I think to synthesize it all, the greatest lesson was just, you know, I wish that I would have documented these stories a bit sooner, you know, while some other family members were still living. But
yeah, that's absolutely so important. And I'm curious, did you get any skill sets, recipes or things? Because I feel like food and seeds are like the best way to go in the past and bring something with you. Was there any like recipes or like seeds or skills that was passed down that you kind of picked up?
Ooh, so this is what I will say. I'm not a big cooker. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big cook, right? But this is what I notice that I do. I pick up a lot now in how my grandmother cooks. And so when they would cook, it was very simple. I used to always say, Grandma, why does your food taste so good? Like, your food is just all, it could be the most simple thing. It can be like fill peas and greens. And I'm like, this tastes amazing because it's fresh, you know? So just something as simple as, so my grandmother's standard breakfast is grits and a piece of meat in the morning. Like, that's just what that woman eats every morning. Okay. No, literally, you will be fed, okay?
That's Lenny in the background, by the way. Lenny is catching the Holy Ghost over here.
Yes, yes. Yeah, if you ever come to Jackson, and this is Jackson, Mississippi, you will be fed. And she eats grits every day. And I watch her, because I stayed with her for like, you know, a month, weeks at a time. And always, she doesn't measure anything. She doesn't measure anything, and she can cook her butt off. And so when she's making her grits, she's just like, 2 spoonfuls. That's it. That's all you need. Now, my favorite brand of grits, I have to shout out Dr. Min. You know, I'm not buying the instant grits, but I'm not judging those about yeah, instant yeah. grits. When you know they, better, they you do better. I just love their rice grits, right? And so when I'm cooking now, Chris, I'm like, I'm not looking at these directions. Grandma says 2 spoonfuls, and that's it. So I feel like, I know you asked one thing, but I had to answer it that way because there are ways that I'm inheriting from her that are very important to me. Another example, I love purple whole peas. Love purple whole peas. Like, you know, if I can't get them fresh, which fresh is the, oh, if you have fresh purple whole peas, y'all, like, if you've never had them, you are missing out. So if I can't get them, like, fresh when I'm in Mississippi, my grandmother will buy frozen purple whole peas. You can't find them up here, actually.
I've never heard of them.
Yeah, well, they're it's like in the black eyed pea family.
Okay.
But they're a little bit smaller and a little bit purplish, and they are delicious. But you can't even find them like in the grocery store. Yeah. So when I'm in Mississippi, I have to get them there, and I'm literally rolling them up and putting them in my suitcase.
Are they like just growing it straight in the garden, or are they picking it from a wholesaler? Like, how do they?
Well, the frozen ones, I'm sure they're picking it from a wholesaler, yeah. like in the South somewhere. Okay. But it's a Southern delicacy for the most part. Like, purple whole peas are like Southern peas, yeah. you know. Brittany Drakefer actually one summer grew purple whole peas up here, okay. and they were divine. But you just can't find them. But I've gotten them fresh in Mississippi before because I have family in Mount Olive actually who has land and they grow purple whole peas. So when we get them, amazing. But if I can't get them fresh, I got to get them frozen.
I was about to say, because you can save those seeds and you can be the plug out here because I'm interested.
No. I've had literally Tala at Brittany. Well, I don't know if Brittany's growing right now, but I know she was the only one in this area as far as I'm concerned that was growing the purple whole peas. This was a couple summers ago too. But the frozen ones are just like the frozen peas. Like, that's it. But anyway, I'm inheriting ways in which she cooks. And so my grandmother loves her greens. She loves her greens and peas. So I find myself cooking a lot of greens and peas. What I've been doing the last couple of times is that I've taken a book down there so my grandmother can write out her recipes. She's given me a fit about this. And this is the sweetest woman on earth. Why do I need to do this? Just write this down. Anything from like boiled peanuts. I love boiled peanuts. Like write it down. I don't care if you're just saying it's a little bit of water, a little bit of salt. Just say that. I need to document that. So I think I'm more so inheriting like her ways, more so like recipes, but I'm cooking what she cooks. Now I will say my other grandmother, my dad's mom, amazing. Like cakes from scratch, like amazing. I do want to learn how to make a pound cake.
Okay.
Her lemon pound cake, off the chain.
I bet.
Off the chain. Off the chain. What I did inherit from both of my grandmothers, frying fish. Mm. Freshwater fish. Okay. Not just any fish, freshwater fish. Going fishing. I've become more accustomed to that now. I go down south, we'll go fishing with my grandmother, my dad's mom. I can bait the fish, all that. I'm not scaling it. Somebody else scale it, okay? But I've learned that, and yeah. People think like, oh, like frying fish is like an easy thing. Not like my aunt and my grandmother taught me how to fry it a certain way.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And it's amazing. This isn't store-bought fish. This is fish that we just caught, and it is amazing. So I would say that's probably like the biggest thing. Okay. I could fry some fish, all right?
Okay. Yeah, because I was about to say, I was like, I know you picked up something from that, and probably from all those interviews you've done too. You've done... like over, 135 episodes? Something
I
like
think
that?
About 134.
Like yeah, something like that. So I was curious. Well, one, I want to talk about the podcast a little bit and the start of that, the origin of that in itself, because that's a whole different story. Like, I know, you know, you're very similar where your eating habits kind of changed once you saw certain documentaries. Mm-hmm. You know, you had family, you know, issues and things like that. I want you to talk a little bit about that because that's super important.
Yeah. Long but short story, I felt duped after I started to learn about the food system. So my mother was experiencing some health challenges, which she's been on the show, I think episode 30-something, I don't know. But we look just alike, so you can't miss it. she was experiencing some health challenges where her jaw would swell really bad, and she didn't know what the heck it was. So, of course, she's went to her primary doctor, and it's just like, We don't know. Actually, I don't even think she went to her primary doctor. She decided at that point that she was just going to go see a holistic doctor. My mother has always been a person to count her calories, watch what she's eating, like everything. And so when it started to happen, like I think it happened like two or three times, she went to go see a holistic doctor and they were like, you know what, you may have an intolerance to gluten.
Mm.
And she's like, what? Like I've been eating bread my whole life, you know, like what? Like what does that mean? So she stopped eating gluten and the swelling stopped from there. And I can pinpoint this time because I had just moved back from New York. This was around 2009. We went to go see, she took us to go see, I don't know if that cinema is still there on East Street Cinema, yeah. If it's still there. I remember that she took me and my sister to go see Forks Over Knives. An amazing documentary, right? It did pretty much like a study of people who had like these different health issues. And they were like, we're going to replace, like, all the crap food you're eating, we're going to place it with more healthy food. Like, that was that. They did that, and they noticed, you know, that they were able to get off medication. I was like, shut the front door. What? I said, okay. So that piqued my interest more, and I was just like, well, let me learn more about food. I picked up a book called Foodopoly by, I think her name is Winona Hunter. I could be jacking that up, but she is like, if she's still the CEO, executive director of like Food and Water Watch, I don't even know where they're located, but very thick book, very dense. It's a heavy read. And in that moment, I learned about our food system pretty much being a monopoly and how government is folded into pretty much they are the decision makers behind our food. Right. I said, shut the front door.
That money.
I said, so you mean to tell me that we got the big guns who are multimillionaires, billionaires making decisions about our food at a policy level and just like all sorts of levels, right? And I said, shut the front door. So I started learning more. Then I got into soil health.
Yeah.
I just wanted to learn about soil. And I was like, you mean to tell me if my food is grown in more healthy soil, like that's better for me and better for my gut? Shut up. Like literally. So at this time, I wasn't even in this space, y'all. My background, I'm an event planner, was, you said, I'm a former event planner. Yeah. I still do a little something on the side, but I was doing more so corporate events. But so this was literally a personal journey for me. And I said, I need to learn more about this. And so I started attending events in the city, obviously, way before the pandemic, before we knew what the hell was happening now. And so I was showing up in these spaces, Chris, and I was like, why am I the only black person, okay, in this room? You know, I'm showing up to events like different food events, and I'm not going to even name these organizations. These organizations were hosting these events, like different food events and stuff like that. And I was learning more about soil health. I was learning more about not necessarily food justice in that point, but the point is I was going to these food related events to learn more, and I was the only one showing up in this space, and I just could not understand why. And I knew enough about my lineage and my family to know I was just like, my grandmother.
Yeah. We about this too.
Right. Like they grew up in the South, literally ring the chicken, grew up off the land, eating the land. That's how they ate. I just did not understand it. And so I was really bothered by it. And so from there, that's actually just really what kicked off my journey, Chris. I started it was something else before Food Talks. And even before then, it was something else. But I started creating events that educated people about food and health, because that's really where I was, and making that soil connection, because that was really important. But even still in that moment, Chris, I felt like I wasn't connecting to people like me. Mm-hmm. And still the folks who were showing up were white people. And I was just like, y'all get this,
you know?
Like, I think it's great that y'all want to show up. That's awesome.
They get
awesome.
All the resources.
You
they
know,
show
but you got yeah. all, yeah, I'm like, y'all got all the resources. So fast forward is when I made a definite decision to really focus on amplifying voices of people of color and black people primarily and people of color on this platform, because I thought it was really important to elevate their work, because I was like, this is not in that moment for me. And it could, there's a billion of us, or however many of us in this world. I'm sure somebody out here was doing it at that point, but I wasn't seeing it. And so I made a decision. And I remember I had done a series of events at Up Top Acre. Shout out to them, amazing crew. And I remember then I was just like, I need to really focus on amplifying voices of people who look like me, because I really want to elevate their work, because right now, we aren't being talked about. So it's gone through different iterations of, you know, things, and that's just being a creator, as you know, changes. But that is the mission. You know, it really is to continue to provide this platform so that, you know, we can share our stories, so that you can see. I want the world to see what you are doing, what other black folk and people of color are doing to really lead this work in the area of food justice, health justice. I want us to continue to share our stories, because for a long time, the stories were being told for us. So I think about decades from now, how important it's going to be to go back and hear these voices. Do you know how rich that is to go back and hundreds of episodes of us telling our own stories, kept somewhere. I'm gonna make sure it's safe.
It's
all right?
The blueprint. You know,
yes.
We're setting the blueprint for the next generation. So we know that we were here, we did this, so you can do this too.
Exactly. And so that's important to me. Edible Activist, I decided to, I think at that time when I created Edible Activist, I was also launched a Kickstarter campaign, and I said, you know what, I'm going to take this on the road. So went to Detroit, shout out Detroit, one of my favorite cities, as a lot of people know, went to Philly to document farmers and gardeners of color who are really doing this work. And then I think at the same time, I don't remember, it more like I was also starting off with the podcast too. Timing may be a little bit off. And so I knew that the podcast was a place that I wanted to elevate voices. And so that's my primary mission. I know you got some other questions for me, but because I will jump ahead of you and tell you where this is going.
I love this. We got to get all we can because, you know, these are important stories. You know, I want to go back and touch on the part you said about making this an intentional platform, right? Doing this for primarily Black people, but people of color. Did you ever struggle with that idea? Because I know as a creator, my platform is very much like that too. I say, hey, I'm for the African diaspora. If you want to come on that journey and have like a little side seat, you're welcome to come, but I make it for the people. Did you ever struggle with that? How did you overcome that? Because there's always times where I'm like, you know, sometimes I feel like, am I reaching the people? Because there's like, you know, a lot of white people will take advantage of these resources and they'll be all about what you're doing. But I really wanted to make that space. So how did you deal with that as a creative?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked this question. So, and this is good. I'm going to tell you why this is good, because there's so many like things in the cracks and crevices of journeys that don't get talked about. And so one thing that I don't think I've ever shared publicly was when I made the decision that I wanted to be intentional about who the voices that I want to elevate on this platform, I was hesitant. I was like, no, I don't like whoever's listening to this, judge me if you will. But I was hesitant. I was just like, I'm afraid just to like really center this on like, you know, a certain demographic of like folks. And I talked to a few people and they were like, oh, no. Like, you need to. And so that's why it's always good to have like a few good consults, you know, in your corner. And so it was. From there, she's kind of like, no, you gotta go this direction. Taking it a step further, fast forward to where we are now in 2022, and I'm being very honest, having very honest conversation. I'm at a point where I really just want to, my intentionality is to focus on Black people. Yeah. Not to say that people of color voices do not matter. I'm not saying that. But that's where I am right now and leaning more into that. And do I have reservations about that? Absolutely, yes. You know, because I know plenty of people who do not identify as Black, who are doing amazing things in this space. And I have interviewed them, right? But that's where I'm leaning into because that's where I am. But I'm also in a space, too, that if there's some pushback from some people, I really don't care. Yeah. Because this is where I am. You know, exactly. Keep it 100. This is where I am, and this is what resonates with me, and this is where I feel like I should be, you know, the direction I should be, you know, heading towards. So I hope that answered your question.
No, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, I feel the same exact way because other groups don't have a problem making their own spaces. I think people people always ask us to be the inclusive ones, to open our spaces, but we have to have some things that are sacred and just straight up for us because it needs to be protected. We have to protect ourselves.
I'm so glad you said that. Like, I don't need to say anything else. Like, yeah. If someone ever had a question, I'm just going to take what you said and just feed them that answer. That's it.
Clip it up, Lenny.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Absolutely. You are so right. Like, and it doesn't have to be like, I don't have to make this inclusive of all. That was my intention before. And again, I'm not saying that their work doesn't matter, and it does. But I'm leaning into really, you know, providing the platform for Black voices. That's where I am.
And you know
right
what
now.
I noticed too is like, once that intentionality happens, it sets a blueprint for other people. There's plenty of creatives that are more Latino based or more Asian based. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to try that, but for our space. And I feel like people will do the same thing for our platforms. They'll see, okay, this is really cool. What about us? Can we make something like this?
Yeah.
And that's just as good because when we do end up collaborating with those people, it comes from a place that's whole.
Exactly.
It comes from a place where everybody's eating, everybody's fed. So.
Yeah. And not for nothing, Chris, like, I don't know. I'm going to try to be as diplomatic as I can when I say this, but the inclusiveness of, you know, people of color, there's just going to be some spaces where I really don't connect with you like that. Yeah, yeah. There just is those cultural, you know,
it's just that.
And it's, I want to learn more because I love to read. I love, like I said, the way that I grew up, I didn't grow up with just black people. Yeah. I grew up in a melting pot. I lived in freaking New York City at one point in my life. Okay. But there are many reasons why, you know, I'm leaning more towards that direction. But I think just what you spoke to, just coming from like a more like whole, like holistic and more like authentic space or place, that's where I want to come from, just being really true. And I just love connecting with my people. Like, it's just nothing like it. So, yeah. You know.
And the crazy thing is, like, just in, like, the diaspora alone, when you talk about the African diaspora, mm-hmm. that's the most diverse group of people on the planet. Mm-hmm. And so just in that, I'm just like, I don't even know if I have time to get to these other places and things
right.
and people. Like, I have to dig into my history. I have to dig into, like, what we have so here because we're just so different. And, you know, that brings up, I'm curious about, because you're not only D.C. based, you go, you know, across the country, I've seen you in Detroit, I've seen you, I think, New York, everywhere. What are some of these different places you've been to, and what do the food stories look like in those places compared to the DMV, per se?
Ooh, that's a great question. Well, I'm glad that you think that I just be gallivanting across the country.
I mean, I've seen a couple places. I don't know how. It seems like you're traveling.
But I do travel a bit, and it's more so, I mean, recently it's more so been like leisurely. I've been trying to spend as much time with my family as I can. But I would say that I can't make a very distinct like difference or comparison with the stories that may be from like Philly, Detroit, or here. Well, no, let me take that back. All cities are different. When I went to Detroit, whole nother level of like advocacy there. They don't play when it comes to their people. Like the black love and like just the black journey is, well, the black history in Detroit is already rich. So I was stepping in a place where people know who they are. Mm. I never felt that here in DC, right?
Ooh, that's good.
And that might hurt for some people to hear, and you can DM me later or send me an email, but that's just me. I'm not saying that it isn't present here. I've seen it more strongly or felt it more strongly in Detroit. And I think that's warranted. I think a lot of people will feel, especially if you've been to Detroit, understand like there's loads of black history here, but it was so different. I stepped in Detroit and I was like, it's just different here.
I call them diaspora hubs. Like across the country, like I feel that way about New Orleans too.
Oh,
it's
one
just
of my favorite
like
places.
Strong, rich,
you can
unapologetic.
Feel it. And that's I'm glad she said that because that's what I'm trying to convey. That's what I want to convey. Very different. Philly, somewhat different. You know, a little bit more rough on the edges. You know, but I got mad love for Philly though. Trust and
good
believe.
People in Philly.
Yeah, definitely. Like you know, like. I feel like advocates for real, but I think it definitely varies. So I definitely felt a different type of energy when I went to Detroit and showing up. I would show up to different events and, you know, people just, they showed up, like they knew who they were. I would talk to people about their lineage, you know, like even like the clothes that they would wear just would reflect where they came from. And it was just, it was a beautiful thing. So definitely different there. Mississippi, I've done some stuff in Mississippi too. Totally different down there. Still lots of work to be done in Mississippi as a whole, but let me just speak to Jackson, Mississippi specifically. There's still like this hump that we're, you know, folks are trying to get over. There's a lot of work being done there, but I don't see, and to be fair, I'm not there 24/7. I'm not everywhere, but, I don't see like the boots to the ground, like advocacy work down there, like I've seen in other cities. Again, not saying that it's not present. I know that it is, but I don't sense it as strongly as I've sensed it in Detroit or like Philly or where else. Those are the primary places where I've done like more like interviews and have connected with people and documented their stories that I can remember at the top of my head. So, but each place is different.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love the answer. You know, I've been thinking a lot. I want to get into the creative side of you for a little bit here because I want to bring value for people who are maybe thinking about starting podcasts, thinking about
doing platforms. Don't do it. No, I'm joking.
Listen, it is not for everyone. We were just talking about this earlier. Like, podcasting is not for the faint of heart. And I want to talk about it. I think the most important part, and we don't have enough conversations, is the economics of podcasting. Mm-hmm. First of all, you interview people from all over the place. How important for us in this movement that we're doing in the land and in the culture, how important is economics for you and then for the people and what you're seeing when interviewing these people?
So when we say economics, let's break this down. Yeah. Like economics in terms of like making money.
Making
like
money. Let's okay, talk. Just let's be talk, very let's clear. Talk making
let's
money.
Be very making how, money. Make how, it plain and clear.
Let's rephrase it. How do we continue to do this important work and continue to profit over that? Because that's the conversation. We talk about the love of what we do and the heart that we put into everything. But sometimes I feel like the economics of what we do is lacking as a culture. And so I would love to get into that part of podcasting and the business and just have a real conversation for people who are thinking about getting into this space.
Yeah, very great question. Well, here's the first thing. So know your worth. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that. Know your worth. The thing about podcasting is that when I got into podcasting, I had no idea that I was getting into podcasting. I fell into it. I put in quotes, but everything is divine, right? Yeah. Everything happens for a reason. And so I didn't know anything. I knew nothing. I shout out to my homie Jack, you know, who ran Full Service Radio, still, you know, runs Full Service Radio, is out in Cali. Jack did not know me. I said, Jack, I want a podcast. He said, okay, what you got? Gave him my concept. He said, this is dope. This is different from what folks are doing. You know, we had like a lot of like music, you know, artists, like creators. They would come in and talk about different creative projects, like music projects. Super dope. I was the only one, the only Black podcaster with like this food justice, health justice lens, right? And so it was putting that pitch out there and it happened. So again, some things are just divine, right? The thing that I appreciated about when I started with Full Service Radio is that the intentionality conversations around, okay, this is how you can potentially make money from the podcast, which is through sponsorship, which I did, right? And so I think, and I'm going to pause there. I'm going to go back to it because I want to lean more into like starting a podcast and things of that nature.
Please.
There are 50 million zillion podcasts out here.
Uploading today.
Uploading right now as we speak, okay? They are starting. They got the backdrop. They got the photographer. They have bought their mic, whether it's from Walmart or Amazon, Do You Boo, whatever. There's a ton of them. There are even larger podcasts that start the day before yesterday, and they blow up, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not a hater. Trust me, I'm not a hater. But there are so many people who intentionally came into this space because they really had something to share. And I'm not saying that they didn't, but I just feel like there are a lot of voices being drowned out because of it. And so I send my love to them. I send my love to every single creative and every podcaster whose voice I feel like is just like being silenced a bit because there's so much like
noise.
Yeah. I really do, because I want everybody out here to like do their thing and be blessed and for it to blow up. I really, truly do. So with that said, you have to be very intentional and in that you really have something to contribute to this space. Like, great. If you want to start a podcast tomorrow, just because, go ahead. Like, but I think getting into a space that is super like oversaturated, I think it's even more important to really have a niche and also know your worth. But also be like, really be committed to this. Yeah. Y'all, like, Chris, there are Mondays, and I just started doing YouTube Lives where I don't want to do my show.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love talking to people. I do. But the anxiety behind it, that you know, I've always been real with every single person who's come into my space, even when I did stuff here, like, it was straight audio. I would get nervous. I would have so much anxiety. And people, I would tell all my guests that. They'd be like, Melissa, you're so good at this. I'm like, I don't care. I'm great at a lot of things, but I still get nervous and I have anxiety. And so there's anxiety because you want it to be great and you want to be, everybody wants to feel like that they are really contributing to society and doing a really great thing. And everybody wants to be seen and everyone wants to be heard. And I understand that. And that is also me. So with that comes a lot of anxiety to do a show because you want it to be great and you want it to go somewhere. You want to make money. This isn't a hobby for me, you know? So it is super important to me. Now, trust me, if you don't need the money, just like I want to do this, do you. I am not that person, all right? But it is very important to understand the business side, to create a budget. People see me show up behind a mic, or they just see me in a studio. And what they like, don't do see, what they do not see is my Monday.com project manager. They do not see my lean business model. They do not see my social media calendar.
Talk about
they
it.
Do not see my goals. They do not see any of that. You do not see that at all. And yes, I will be very honest in that over the last few months, because I continued my podcast throughout the pandemic. I did not stop. I was the only one, as far as I know, out of all the podcasters that podcasted out of Full Service Radio that pretty much continued. Might have been one other person. And still to this day, I think I'm still the only one. So that is like commitment, dedication, because I really truly believe in what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Even if I see other people like, you know, be leaps and bounds ahead of me, like I'm committed to this, even on the days that I don't want to be committed because I'm tired. Yeah. Right. So people don't see the business side. There is a business side in understanding the numbers and having your goal and striving towards something. So you hadn't like, unless you just want to, you know, Jerry, the Tony Natural. We had a whole conversation in here. She's like, if you're not making money from it, it's just a hobby.
Yeah, that's real. It's that was my favorite hobby. Episode, too.
Yes, up to this day.
Yeah.
It's just a hobby. So it's important because we, especially as Black people, as creatives, is creative work. We are still like the most underpaid, underrepresented, right?
But everybody takes our stuff.
They take our stuff.
Yeah.
They take our stuff and they make money from it. They extract from our culture and our words, and they use everything that we have and they make money off of it. Millions. And sure, billions. Yeah. And so it's so important that you get a piece of the pie. And I believe that there's a market for everyone, like for everyone. I don't care if you want to start a cupcake line. There's a million people with a cupcake business, make star, you know, horse cupcakes. I don't know. People who like horses. I don't know. But like that, I think that's the most important thing, just because we are underpaid and if you have something of value, let me be very clear.
Right. Not everybody deserves to
get paid. Just don't be concocting nothing and be like, all right, pay me the money. Like, no, don't do that.
Gotta be quality.
It gotta be quality, like all that stuff. Right. But that's super important. I can be very honest and transparent that I have intentionally for the last few months have paused in making any type of money for the podcast. Because I was making money off of like sponsorships, like corporate sponsorships. I was, but I stopped because I needed to pause and reassess some things.
Yeah.
And so in understanding my approach on like who to target, there are some things that I knew that I needed to clean up on the back end because there were some changes that I'm making, because you just can't be making willy-nilly ass. You can't do that. You have to be very strategic.
Yeah.
So trust me, I'm going to get back to making my coins very soon because there's some things that I'm doing on the back end, but you got to get paid.
What is your like biggest frustration now about the podcast game, and how are you kind of tackling it or looking at it?
Oh, let's see. Scaling. I'm not tackling it. Yeah. I mean, like, no, let me not say I'm not tackling it. That's what I'm working on. Like, it's one of my goals to scale up, and I am working on a ton of things. But it would be my greatest dream and goal to have like a network of not even necessarily like podcasts. That would be great. I do have like, that's a long-term vision.
Yeah.
But to have like
multimedia, like span.
Yes.
Yeah.
But for the podcast specifically for Edible Activists, if I had like 3 or 4 of me who were in alignment with the mission and they understand, you know, these conversations, they understand the landscape of food justice and what's happening, and they can connect with people, that would be awesome because I'm tired.
Yeah. I'm tired. It takes so much energy. And have you?
My friend had to remind me, because I have. You think if I had anxiety coming into the studio, I have anxiety setting up shop in my apartment, going on YouTube every Monday. My friend, who's a whole writer in theater in New York City, she was like, Melissa, you're putting on a show every week. I said, you're right. Anytime, like, I show up visually, you know, like, I have to make sure, like, I'm smiling. And I'm going to smile naturally, but there's things you have to be even way more intentional about when you show up, like, to the world. And, like, you have all these viewers, like, looking at you, whether it's, like, real time or, like, after the fact. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Work in progress.
No, it's a lot. I'm always kind of thinking about that. You know, as creatives, you have to deal with so many things, right? You have to deal with the audio portion. You have to interview the guests. You have to prep everything.
Don't get me started on the audio portion. I've had, you know, Chris was on my last show. He was present, and I had to shut the whole damn thing down because I'm not a tech person. Mm-hmm. So I mitigated it after the fact, and I said, damn, I wish I would have known this before I, you know, ended the show. And that part sucks because you have a sizable amount of people who actually show up for the live, and then trying to get those same people back the next day, it's just like, oh, hell, you know. So that's definitely, but that's also, like, to me, I had a choice. I had two choices. It was sit and sulk or learn. And what I learned is that I'm still ironing out the kinks because YouTube Live is still new to me. Mm-hmm. So I was like, this is just one extra thing that I can add to the list. When I have my guests, do not do et cetera. Do, like, if you don't have this, you can't be on the show. Like, you know, just, and I thought, you know, I'm pretty detailed. I'm detailed. Yeah. So it's just still ironing out the kinks.
Yeah,
so.
I know some people who, like, send their guests mics and all kinds of stuff. They get that. I don't got that. but, you know. But I'm curious, like, I don't think you know, like, how big your platform reaches, because with podcasting is difficult, right? Mm-hmm. Like, not even me, like, I just found out a couple of days ago, there's somebody in Ghana listening to, like, the podcast and stuff like that. And it's like, you don't get the immediate feedback like you do on, like, social media. It feels like sometimes you're just talking to a wall. Unless you got, like, a community built into that, it's very hard to understand, like, metrics and, you know, listens and subscribers, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. That being said, I feel like your specific platform has created its own ecosystem now, its own community. I can't tell you how many collaborations I've had, how many people I've gotten to connect with as creatives because of your platform. And I'm just curious of, like, you know, who are some of your favorite podcast? I mean, it's so hard to ask you because everybody is amazing, right? But who are some of your favorite interviews? Who are the people that you learned the most from and took, like, just little nuggets from?
Yeah. Ooh, always a tough one because you never want to, like, single out people. Well, of course, I have to say Chris because he's interviewing me, right? So let's just go ahead and get that out of the way. But no, because I do remember Chris brought me flowers. Like, that was just, like, a sweet experience. Mm-hmm. And we didn't know each other. So I just appreciated that. I have a few people to shout out. So one of my very first guests was Lauren Vanderpool.
Yeah.
Queen of Green. Does her thing. Like, she's DC native, doing her thing in California and all across the globe, right? And Queen she is an influencer and a significant following. Yeah. And I said, let me reach out to her.
Yeah, try.
You know, let me try. Instantly, she came in. Glowing as beautiful, like glowing as usual, just beautiful. And I was just, like, amazed that she would even, like, oblige, you know, to my invitation.
That was episode 2, I think, too.
Yeah, it was episode 2, but she was technically my first official guest in person. People don't know that because it was a pre-record, because she traveling as she does. So Kevin was my first actual, like, audio guest, but Lauren was my first in-person guest. People don't know that. She was the first one to grace the studio with me for the podcast. Yes. And she's just already just full of, like, so much, like, beautiful energy. And she affirmed while we were in the room just, like, how great a job I'm doing and how this platform is needed. And, again, this was at its infancy. And so just to hear her say that was just, like, so much love. And to this day, I love Lauren. Like, I'd be literally like, girl, when you coming back to D.C.? I just love her. Definitely have to shout out Jeff Edwards, who I forgot the name of the episode. He's on Instagram. I learned so much from Jeff. He's actually been in the studio here with me a couple times. And one of the greatest things, and I know I've shared this on a few episodes, is that Jeff, I will never forget, said the most. He said, some of us are so obsessed with history, like learning just history, like other people's history of, you know, of our city area. He said the most important history that you need to be concerned about is your family history.
That one hit me too.
I said, I will never forget it. And he is part reason why I'm like documenting everything. Yeah. And also just really like, we got to get this. I got to ask more questions. Yeah. He said, you need to know what your grandmother ate, what she grew, what her grandmother grew, what her mother, like all those things. And I just said, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Goodness, there were some other ones. We mentioned Jerry of Turning Natural, just super dope.
I cried during that episode.
You told that me! You told me!
I was in the middle of Trader Joe's, like doing the, what's the joint, Denzel Washington movie where he got the single tear, like hard crying.
Oh my gosh.
I was doing one of those, man. Man, that one hit me because it just related. And I love that about your platform because it feels like no matter what people are doing, people are doing all kinds of stuff on your platform. You can find one episode where you can say, oh, that's me, you know, and really resonate with that person and with that story. So
Exactly. There are a couple. I've enjoyed pretty much all of my guest. But I would say those are probably the most significant ones. The one with my mother.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
One with my mother. When I asked my mom to be on the show, she said, is this a joke? She literally said that. She was like, this is a joke. I said, no, Mom, it's not a joke. No, she was like, okay. Shout out to my mom. No, that woman, I know I get on her nerves, but she gonna show up for me. So, yeah, and that was a beautiful episode. Like, I got so many people DM me, which is like, first of all, I love your mom. And like, just to hear her, my mother still has a bit of a Southern accent, just to hear her grow about how she grew up in Alabama. Like, it was pretty amazing. So, Dr. Amen. That was a really great episode too. Like,
very interesting guy.
He's like, the fact that I even was able to get him in the studio, a whole farmer.
He works hard.
He works crazy hours. Like, even when I think about it, I'm like, he literally made his way into DC to come like sit with me and talk with me about his journey into farming.
He's basically off the grid. So like, for him to come in, that was special.
Yeah, and I know that's probably the only time I got with him, so I got to suck that episode up with a straw.
Right.
So that was really great. That was really great just to have a black rice farmer. Like, pretty much the only black rice farmer in the mid-Atlantic,
any rice farmers, period.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So, yeah, that was pretty dope.
Do you have any, like, strategies or tips for reaching out to people? Because obviously you're very personable. Is there any, like, specific things you've done in your systems and how you go about reaching out?
I would have to say when I first started the show, it was just kind of like, I want to interview everybody. So whoever you suggest and whoever I come across on Instagram, that's what I'm going to do. And it's actually worked. I haven't had anybody pretty much say no on the show. But now I'm being more intentional, especially about me wanting to, you know, go like a slightly different direction. Obviously, social media, even more. So paying attention to hashtags. And where folks are in like specific cities. So if there's like a specific city that you want to highlight, just really being intentional about researching those hashtags and finding people who show up in those searches and making those connections, I think is
what are some of the hashtags you got in your bank?
Well, I'll be letting out some of my, not a secret.
Maybe some of the ones you already did, saying what else, too much sauce.
Yeah. Well, I will say, so recently, shout out to Falani of Bird's Nest Box. Her and I hosted a very small and our inaugural dinner celebrating Black women food activists and growers. And so just a little bit of a taste for more of that to come and more of who I would love to focus on for this platform. So I've been doing a lot more intentional searches for Black women farmers.
Nice. Okay, I got some for you.
And specifically cities.
In cities? Okay.
In cities.
Got you. Okay.
Yep.
Fair enough. Cool. All right. Well, I got a couple more questions for you. I know we could talk all day.
Chris keeping me here all day, y'all.
I could talk to you all day. I love our little conversations. Good. When we hit the coffee shops, we be talking to
them. Talk all day. And yeah. I appreciate it. I have to just really just thank you again, Chris. As again, this is the first podcast that has interviewed me, the first Black podcast that's interviewed me, the first Black food podcast has interviewed me, and you got me out of my shell because I don't go anywhere. This pandemic has shifted the way that I socialize. And I said, oh, I get to get out today.
Yep.
And I live in the city and I'm coming down 16th Street. And I was like, ooh, this is a little weird. This is real different. Like,
I know.
So I'm just honored. So
no, I'm honored to have you and to be in this space. But I mean, you do so much for the community. Like I said, you're a media mogul in my eyes, and up and coming. I can't wait to see what you do in the future. What do you do for, honestly, self care? What does health and wellness look like for you these days?
Obviously, saying no, have to learn how to restructure your no's. Just say you're not available. No's just sounds really too hard.
You got code switch a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not available. I'm available at this price. That's self-care.
Ooh, I love that one.
Yeah.
Available at this. That at just this happened price. To me the other day. Someone was asking me for like a brand partnership or something. I was like, you know
for
what?
For free?
For free.
The audacity. Audacity is free these days. Yeah. Like,
and I was like, they were going to exchange some products, but I'm like, I got enough products. I was like, here are my prices. You know, I'm not really doing, you know, swap for products right now. So if you want to check that out, you come back at me, you know, we'll talk. Haven't heard from them since, but you know, hey, I did my no. Right there.
Good for you.
Yeah.
You know, watching episodes of Raising Kanan, Queen Sugar. I joke, but like, I like that. I love, like, I'm not even a big TV watcher, but when I find that thing that I like to watch, oh, I'm in it. Okay. Literally. And what I need to do more of is to love myself more and to really approve. So I appreciate you affirming me and just like your great words, but a form of self-care that I'm still, you know, need to do a better job at is just really approving myself in this space and know that I'm needed. And that this work that I'm making a really great contribution, you know, to this space. So I just want to say that because it's easy to say, you know, what we do for self-care, but like what else needs to be done in order to like really reflect that self-care. But yeah, I kick my feet up and I allow myself, I don't take naps all the time, but when I don't feel like doing a thing, I'm not doing it. And I say I'm not doing it and I'll say like, I've done enough for the day. That's it. Because I'll keep going.
Yeah.
I will keep going. So, yeah. And I like to go to the grocery store a lot.
I do too, actually. I like comparing the different grocery stores and like, what are they doing with the customers? I mean,
it's
people
expensive
watching.
As shit.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I don't know what grocery store isn't expensive.
But I love going to the grocery store.
Like,
let me not just any grocery store. I love going to co-ops.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So like, I love going to co-ops and I would literally say, I'm going to go to the co-op today. Mm-hmm. Let me go to the store and just browse the aisles. Yeah. Like, it's just something that I just love to do.
You got any favorites in the DMV?
Oh, well, yeah. Well, I don't know if they're favorites, but you know, the one that I frequent is Tacoma Co-op in Tacoma Park. So that's closer by where I live. I actually thought about becoming a member, but I was like, these folks don't know me. I got to be voted in, and if they don't vote me in, I'm going to be raising hell. So anyway, but I actually do like that one because it's very small.
Yeah.
You know, it's not too many. I mean, there's some of us in there, you know,
yeah,
but
yeah.
I love Tacoma Park area.
Yeah.
But that's actually probably the only co-op. I don't get to glut as much as I would like to.
I heard of glut.
But yeah, I used to freaking there all the time, but I don't get there as much as I would like. But you know, my organic market is also a favorite of mine too. Mm-hmm. You know, not a co-op, but still more of like it's mom and pop still own. It's not public as we know.
Right.
And I love the markets. I would tell you, I go to Tacoma Farmers Market, and my favorite two stands to go to. Purple Mountain Organic, which is Dr. Men's stand. I was just there last Sunday, picked up okra, rice grits, oatmeal, best. You will never buy store-bought oatmeal once you ever, and I haven't. I can't go back to it. I can't. And Flowers of the Forest Farm, Amazing. Bought strawberries. I bought everything from them, actually. I was just like, I hope y'all got more berries. Yeah. I'm taking all of them. All of them. I was just like,
stock up.
I'm stocking up. And I've been like freezing them, like all that. So, and these are some of like favorite, like black owned, you know, even though Flowers of the Forest, don't quote me. It is, I don't, it might be a biracial couple who operates the farm, if I'm not mistaken. And so, yeah, I one of my favorite stands to go to when I go to the market. So I'm very intentional too about that. Shout out to not a co-op, but I get my CSA through Gail at Three Part Harmony Farm. So every other Tuesday, I look forward to my share that I pick up from them.
Love that.
So I love it. I get to lay all my stuff. I'd be like, look at all this black produce. Look at this. It's the beautiful whole table. I just love it. And so I've also just been more committed to eating as close to the land and more hyper locally as I possibly can.
Sure.
So if I'm going to the grocery store, it's just like little compliment items now, but like all my, like my greens and my vegetables, like, you know, I want to be grown by someone near me. And so that's what I've been buying more of. So
the basics. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Love that. All right. All right. Well, I always wrap up these interviews with one question I ask all my guests, and that is, what does it mean for you to be a part of the African diaspora?
Ooh.
And you can take some time for this one. This is kind of deep.
That is deep. That is deep. It is, for me, it is acknowledging who I am and where I come from, and being grateful to my ancestors for carving this path. That's what it means to me. That's my most immediate, honest, you know, response. But really acknowledging that there is none of this without my ancestors and where they came from. And we're just expanding upon the work that they've already done. And so that's, I'm playing a part in that. So
I love that. Continuing that legacy and that lineage.
Exactly.
All right. Melissa, thank you so much again for coming on the podcast. This has been an absolute joy. I can't believe people haven't interviewed you before. Y'all need to do better. But I'm glad I got the first one.
You did. You get all the brownie points.
All the brownie points.
Yes.
Thanks again, y'all. Appreciate you guys for listening. And thank you, Melissa, again.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you guys soon.
Peace.
Thanks for tuning in. You can catch today's episode on iTunes, Spotify, and Simplecast. And be sure to follow us at Food Talks in Color, that's just the letter N, on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And did you know we are on Patreon? This is a way for you to take action and support our mission of amplifying BIPOC voices on the Edible Activist Podcast. Visit patreon.com/foodtalksincolor to learn more. Peace and blessings. And remember, in the great words of Baba Tariq Adunu, there is no culture without agriculture.